Talk Radio 790 KABC, Peter Tilden at 10, continues right now. Hour number two, brought to you by Larry Miller and Sit and Sleep, as always, will be anyone's advertised price or your mattress is free. I got tickets for Lynyrd Skynyrd's Last of the Street Survivors Farewell Tour with Bad Company, Blackberry Smoke, The Outlaws at Glen Helen. I will tell you when to call for that. But right now, call for this, the phone number, 800-222-5222. Yesterday, the Trump administration proposed cutting food stamps, which is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. He wants to cut it by $17 billion in 2019 and more than $213 billion over the next decade. And this is part of the budget proposal, which is across-the-board cuts to a lot of programs, including federal housing subsidies and Medicaid, etc. The budget director, Mick Mulvaney, was selling the positives of what they want to do with the food program. And I'd love to get your take. I'll give you my take on this in a minute. They want to slash the food aid to low-income families and make up the difference with, ready, a box of canned goods. So instead of giving people electronic cash to spend, they think they can do it cheaper by delivering the food. And he actually used, he promoted them a couple of times. I guess this is why their stock went up a skosh yesterday, but he talked about it as a Blue Apron type program. If you don't know what Blue Apron is, you get ingredients shipped to your house and then you make the food, and it's supposed to be cheaper. It also saves you at the time. It's supposed to be convenience things. His quote is, what we do is propose that for folks who are on food stamps, part, not all, but part of their benefits come the actual sort of, and I don't want to steal somebody's copyright, but a Blue Apron type program where you actually receive the food instead of receiving the cash. His answer to why they would do that is it lowers the cost because we can buy it at wholesale prices, whereas they have to buy it at retail. It also makes sure they're getting nutritious food, so we're pretty excited about that. So there were a lot of pushback on that. Critics jumped on that, and they're saying that it's unfair to draw a comparison between a food stamp program, which delivers food at an average of $1.37 per meal, and a high-end meal kit that runs about $10 per serving. So the past 40 years, some a little bit of background, the Agriculture Department either distributed benefits, paper coupons, or through a virtual disbursements on the electronic benefit transfer card. So it lets recipients use them as cash on the foods of their choice at their own grocery store. But under this proposal, the Agriculture Department, and they're calling it America's Harvest Box. That's the name of the program, America's Harvest Box. All households that get more than $90 per month in benefits, which is 81% of the households that take SNAP, will begin receiving about half their benefits in the form of government-purchased non-perishable food items. So I guess you can use the other half for whatever you want. It would include shelf-stable milk. It would include juice, grains, cereals, pasta, peanut butter, beans, canned meats, fruits, vegetables, and according to the USDA, everything they need for a balanced meal. They estimate it could supply these goods at about half the cost of retail, is what they're saying, slashing the cost of SNAP while still feeding the hungry. So nobody would fall through the cracks, is their claim. You would still get it. It's just you would get it in a different way. And he said it's kind of like Blue Apron, and their shipments are about fish and meat and produce. And some on social media said, you got to be kidding. The Blue Aproning of SNAP is not going to work. With Blue Apron, here's the pushback. The pushback is you get to pick your meals and decide when they come with Blue Apron. This, the government decides for you when you get it and what you get. And a lot of angry advocates, the food box, say it would affect about 16.4 million households, and they would deliver the boxes. So my question is, and I'm sitting back looking at the government saying, okay, I get there's a fraud in this program that you want to try and eliminate. And there's issues that you would try and eliminate. And you also want to make sure that the people who are getting this instead of half of the cash they would get to spend stuff for themselves are really saving the government a whole lot of money. What I'm wondering about, and you know, when the government gets into a business, a retail business, how would the government, A, organize this? How would they coordinate putting this together? How would they make sure that people get the right foods? Like in one household, somebody's a diabetic. a baby who needs a special diet. Somebody is a vegetarian. Somebody, there's a myriad of diets that people are on, okay, when they buy their own stuff. So you'd have to accommodate that somehow. A, B, you'd have to get it there on time. So I guess you use our postal system to get it there in time. But the cost of the boxes, the shipping, the buying, the coordinating, I mean, this is like a brand new program that you're initiating. I would love to see, great, if it works, great, but I'd like to see how they do the math before it goes out. I'd like to see how they pencil this out and figure out who the buyers are, who's getting the contracts, first of all. How do you bid on a contract for all of that stuff? Are you giving it to existing stores? Is there going to be favoritism in that bidding process, by the way? But my sense is this sure smells like something costs a whole lot more than hitting somebody up with an electronic voucher. Coordinating the food, getting the food to them, making sure that it gets there in time, like I said, making sure that their diet's right, like for a diabetic, etc. That would be something that would be hard to do, I would think. And then how do you get it rural? I mean, in big cities, easier to get, but a lot of these food delivery companies are having a problem getting it with rural delivery, and it's going to cost you more to send these boxes to rural delivery. So how you would distribute it, how you deal with specialized diets, it feels really complicated, and it feels really expensive. Also, the other part is it's going to tick off food retailers, because right now you got Walmart, you got Target and other stores that could lose billions if food stamp benefits are cut. On Monday, the Food Marketing Institute, a trade association for grocery stores, condemned the Harvest Box proposal as expensive, inefficient, and unlikely to generate any long-term government savings. Ironically, that's the problem that the Blue Apron has had. And they saw their customer base contract because people try it. And yet, it's not that cheap. And after a while, they go, you know what? I'd rather just go to the store and get what I want. And also the decision is, what do I want to eat today rather than, you're telling me what I'm having today. Even though today I am not in the mood for whatever, the biscuits and the peanut butter. So they saw their base contract in 2017. And a recent report by the Market Research Data Essential found that 4 in 10 lapsed meal kit subscribers dropped their service because they were too costly. So how they're going to do the logistics, which I would think are hugely daunting, and the fact that experts in the industry, and I'm not no food expert, express skepticism that the government could do it better. I don't know. How do you pencil out a program like this before you initiate the program and find out that, I missed the ball on this one. I missed the cost, the administrative cost, the inefficiency. Plus, you're stigmatizing people in that they have to eat what you send them because I'm poor. I'm going to take what you're sending me, and thank you very much. And how do you make sure that you don't have failures in this before you launch it? Love to get your take on this. 800-222-5222. Is this a good idea? Should this replace the electronic benefit transfer cards and have the, what's it called again? The the food box. The America's Harvest box is here with the shelf-stable milk, juice, grain, cereals, pasta, peanut butter, beans, etc. Now, if they can do it at half the price and they can beat the $1.37 per meal, knock yourself out. And if people are okay with it and it's healthy and it's nutritional and you can still buy what you want with the other half, I guess. But how are you going to prove to anybody that you can launch a program like this, organize it, do all the purchasing, do the organizational stuff, and execute all the delivery plus the box? You make the box edible. If you make the box edible, that's a plus. But how do you get the cost down? It sounds like we're gearing up for something that's going to be really, really a bear to handle. And you got to get it out there to a lot. It's a lot of folks. And if you launch it, by the way, if you launch it poorly and all of a sudden it doesn't work right from the get-go, now you're in. You're on that treadmill to oblivion where all of a sudden people are complaining. And then you got to get, what's the gearing up time? Can you afford to say to 16.4 million households, there's going to be some growing pains and it's going to hurt. So maybe you're not going to eat for a little bit while we figure this out, and your deliveries may come late, and they may be more expensive in the beginning, but we'll get this together, and we'll do it. And by the way, I give them credit for thinking outside of the box, actually inside the box. I give them credit for thinking outside the box and trying to save some money and do something differently And I know that there is fraud in this, in these programs. I don't know the extent. I know it's been diminished quite a bit because it's electronic now and they have a better way of checking, but I know that the fraud still happens. And I know in the past it's happened since the launch of the program in the '70s. I remember there was a scandal. USDA agents uncovered all this trafficking rings in Chicago and St. Louis and Philadelphia. And people got locked up in Tennessee for this. In the '80s, they had employees uncover evidence leading to like 1,400 indictments of food stamp fraud. But I think it's diminished quite a bit since they've done it electronically. Is this a smart idea? Let's talk to Kat in Los Angeles. You're on Talk Radio 790 KBC. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing okay. What do you think? Can the government pull this off efficiently and make sense?
You know, I think their heart's in the right place. However, currently I'm a high income earner. However, after the 2008 crash, we there was some job loss.
Sure.
We were on SNAP for a while. And one of the most significant problems we had is sometimes we couldn't afford to have our gas on. So the main glaring hole that I'm seeing here is if you send meat to people, especially people who are just struggling to keep their water on, their lights on, their gas on, if there's gas not on, how are they even going to cook their food? What about people who are, quasi-homeless who don't even have a kitchen, period, to even cook in?
Well, again, they're saying the foods are going to be, if you listen, it's nothing that has to be made. It's cereals, pasta does. Peanut butter, beans, uh-huh. Canned meat, canned meats, fruits, vegetables. Uh-huh. It's all shelf stable items. So, and that would mm-hmm. only, that would be half of the program. The other half would be the same as it is now. You can take the money we're sending you and you can buy whatever you want with it to supplement that. I'm questioning the efficiency and if the government could really do this in an effective way. Because right now they're just sending it to you electronically. Or in some cases, paper. Here, they're going to have to actually make all these deliveries to 16.4 million households and rural households for less than $1.37 a meal?
Absolutely. Why not? I mean, you bring up a really good word, supplementary. So supplementary means that you are going to use these items to supplement the meal that you're creating.
Right.
However, if someone does not have a place in which to create that meal, it can cause a very large gap in their ability to, conserve food. What about people who don't have a lot of people are homeless living in their cars.
Right.
Where do they store this food?
How long were you on SNAP, by the way?
Around 2008, spouse lost their job. And then it took about 5 years to really get back on our feet. It was really tough. I'd just gotten out of the Army, and it was, it was an elbow job.
And psychologically, yeah. Psychologically must have been insane for you. And how did you, what was the moment to turn things around?
Well, she finished her graduate degree. I work in the cable industry. And, we had to work really hard for years and years. And it wasn't really until probably, maybe just 2 years ago that things turned around, extensively, but it took time and multiple times throughout the course of, the last 10 years, we had times where we didn't have gas. We had one time where our stove broke down and we didn't have a stove for 7 months.
So you had to get all prepared food. You had to do sandwiches, whatever you could.
Right. We had to do sandwiches, whatever we could. And, sometimes we would actually use the SNAP program to go to McDonald's. Because we just did not have a way to prepare food.
I hear you. Well, thanks for calling, and I really appreciate the feedback and the input.
No problem.
And I'm glad you're doing okay. 1-800-222-5222. A good idea? Is this a creative idea to deal with this program? Or is the program, to your knowledge, working okay? I think from what I've been reading, and it's hard to discern, it seems like the fraud has been not alleviated, but it has been reduced pretty greatly. But sending out food to folks, boy, I'm looking and I'm thinking, this is a massive undertaking when you're trying to cut down on government expense. How do you vet this to make sure that it's not going to add to government expense? How do you know that this isn't going to cost three times what we're paying now? And where's that budget going to come from, if they're wrong? If you're in the food industry, I'd love to hear from you. Maybe you have some insight. 800-222-5222. Because it sure smells like a creative idea that could easily go bad on execution, and gearing this thing up. It's not like a Federal Express. It's not like a commercial company where you have time to slowly gear it up, or maybe they do it in certain parts of the country. They start slowly and then roll it out. But it sounds like once you're in it, you're stuck. You're in it, and that that train has left the station. 800-222-5222. Peter Tillman at 10. We will be back in a moment. Radio 790 KABC, Peter Tilden at 10 continues, hour number two, and it's time to call if you'd like to go see Lynyrd Skynyrd's Last of the Street Survivors farewell tour with special guests Bad Company, Blackberry Smoke, and The Outlaws at the Glen Helen Amphitheater, May the 26th. Tickets are on sale now. You're the fifth call again. You're the fifth caller at 800-222-5222 right now. Dino will get you some tickets, and I wish you good luck on that. We just had a call, a couple calls that said that the food stamp program, they sell the food stamps right now. Yes, there is a portion of people who sell food stamps. There's a percentage of fraud, but a large number of the, most of the people who get food stamps actually use them and use the electronic benefit transfer cards the way they're supposed to. I don't know the percentage of fraud, but I know that they've scrutinized it over the years and they've attempted to cut it way, way down. But when the government decides what you get, I don't know that they can roll out this program and make it make sense. It just seems to me that the affordability is going to go right down the tubes. And I'm just wondering how you can vet this before you roll it out, before we read that somebody made a fortune, the company's made big fortunes for supplying it with contracts, and yet the program, oopsie, is not working. Another thing I want to vent about, by the way, and you can still talk about this after the bottom of the hour news, is bribery. And it doesn't seem to bother anybody that Washington has slowly inched toward more corruption. And you can see it, and I'm not wrong, and challenge me, 800-222-5222, with federal prosecutors abandoning the effort to retry Senator Robert Menendez, the Democrat from New Jersey, whom they accused of accepting all of these gifts from his buddy in exchange for help. We saw this with the governor of Virginia, too. So I'll get into this in a bigger way, but Washington just got much more corrupt, and you sit there going, yeah, I can't stand Congress. They have a low approval rating. I can't stand how corrupt they are and the lobbying, and we got to put an end to it. And guess what? They just stepped up their game and they're protected and they can do it now openly. And they don't even have to hide it at this point. They can just do it blatantly. And I guess they get away with it because you just don't seem to care. So we'll talk about that after the news here on Talk Radio 790 KABC when Peter Tilden at 10, hour number two, returns.
KABC News is live and local at 11:30. I'm Jeff Whittle. And a large crowd is expected tonight when the Pico Rivera City Council holds a vote on whether to ask Councilman and El Rancho High School teacher Gregory Salcido to resign. Salcido created an uproar after he was secretly videotaped while disparaging the U.S. military in his classroom recently, and then that video was made public. Pico Rivera residents will be allowed to address the City Council before tonight's vote. The Senate Intelligence Committee is holding a hearing today on worldwide threats. Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats told the members that cyber attacks are now a problem for several countries.
This is an existential threat, potentially to the United States, but also to North Korea. Kim Jong-un views any kind of a kinetic attack or effort to force him to give up his nuclear weapons is an existential threat to his nation and to his leadership in particular.
And former White House Staff Secretary Rob Porter was reportedly being considered for deputy chief of staff when he was forced to resign over allegations he'd abused his ex-wives. White House correspondent Caitlin Collins reports.
Not only had Rob Porter taken on an elevated role in the White House when John Kelly became the chief of staff late last summer, Rob Porter was in serious discussions to be promoted when he abruptly resigned last week from the White House.
Talk Radio 790 KABC Sports. The Clippers beat Brooklyn 114-101 to remain just a half game behind Denver and New Orleans for the final playoff berth in the Western Conference. Lakers will visit New Orleans tomorrow. L.A. Kings skate in Carolina this afternoon starting at 3:30 p.m. on KABC. Ducks visit Detroit this afternoon. At the Winter Olympics, 17-year-old Chloe Kim of Torrance won the gold in the women's halfpipe, and Arielle Gold won the bronze. That gives the U.S. 6 medals overall, 3 gold, 1 silver, 2 bronze. Norway leads the medal count with 11, and that's sports on the home of the L.A. Kings, 790 KABC. Traffic, a market check, weather, and more Tilden at 10 next. KABC News Time, 11:32.
Talk Radio 790 KABC, Peter Tilden at 10 continues hour number 2. Congratulations to Charles in Irvine. He was ecstatic. He's a rock and roller, and he never won anything, and he won tickets to Leonard Skinner's Last of the Street Survivors Farewell Tour. So congratulations. I'm sure we have more tickets tomorrow. I'll tell you when to call, because apparently it's a hot ticket. Every line blew out, and then some. Some I didn't know we had. So, gosh, I would love to go into politics. It's just amazing how you can benefit, the amount of money you can make, what you can get away with. In 2016, the Supreme Court ruled that you got to set a really, really high bar to prove political corruption. They basically ruled there's got to be explicit trade of favors, political favors for contributions and gifts. I mean, I think you got to have a guy on video yelling, "Yes, you hand me that and I will get you the contract." And even then, the guy's probably going to say, "I was lying. That's not what I was talking about." You got one of the cases is Menendez, which made me swallow my tongue. He'd been accused of accepting gifts from his buddy who's an eye surgeon, Salmon Melgen, who's, by the way, in a federal prison right now for 18 counts of fraud. He overbilled Medicare $8.9 million. And supposedly Menendez was trying to help him get a port contract in the Dominican Republic and also get green cards for girlfriends that he was flying back here. So Menendez got from Meldon $700,000 in political contributions. He stayed at his place in the island for free. He took free private plane trips, tons of other goodies. I don't have enough time to list everything he got from this guy. A lot of it in the same day. And you can see that he took specific action to help the guy. But they couldn't prove that there was an explicit quid pro quo. I mean, you'd have to be a moron at this point to get caught. You could basically take anything you want as a senator, congressman, and do in return hold a fundraiser, make calls on somebody's behalf, and then just say, "Well, you didn't catch me at the moment we made the agreement. I'm doing it because he's my buddy and because I like him." Well, why do you like him? Because he gave me $700,000 and he lets me stay in his place in the Dominican Republic. This is unbelievable, and we talk about how much we hate Congress and how much they get away with and how much they don't look out for us. This is corruption at a level that we've never seen. And you know what? You don't care. 800-222-5222. I don't think people care. You'll complain about Congress. You'll say they got the lowest approval rating. And I don't think they have our best interest in mind. I think it's all about them, and they serve themselves while they're there, and they all get rich while they're there. And then they go into lobbying afterwards. I mean, our last Speaker of the House, John Boehner is making a fortune, man. Now he can play golf twice a day. But how do you put anybody away for corruption in Washington D.C. anymore? I wonder if Chicago, if this impacts Chicago, because like I was saying, Chicago, if you're an elected official in Chicago, the first thing you should do if you're a mayor or governor is make sure that you alter the prisons and make them more comfortable, because you're probably going to end up there. Same with Philadelphia. But Menendez, this guy Melgen is in prison. He overbilled Medicare, and he asked Menendez to do all of this stuff for him. He got $700,000. I almost said in exchange for, but no. It was not exchange for. This is just separate deals. I hand you $700,000, and I have no expectation. I fly you around. I have no expectation. I do not. Please, don't make a call on my behalf. Please, don't help me with the port deal. No, I heard you did it anyway. Oh my gosh, you did it anyway on your own. Why don't we take my private jet? Not because you did that. Why don't you take a vacation down to my place and hang with some of the women I'm trying to get contracts for? Does this not, I guess it doesn't bother anybody. So prosecutors decided they were going to, even engineer Steve said, "Oh, they're going to retry the case." No, Steve, prosecutors felt with the new bar and what the Supreme Court has ruled, they didn't have enough of a case because today you really need to see the guy basically taking the $700,000 and saying implicitly, I will do this for you because I took the $700,000. That person can't lace and tie. You'd have to be a complete niblick, a complete imbecile to be that blatant and that stupid and that clumsy. And I'm sure some politicians are, but you're not going to see anybody at all. This just, you know what this just did? It opened the floodgates. If everybody else in Congress went, huh? Like Scooby-Doo, you mean Menendez did not get busted for that? And he's flying to the Dominican Republic and he's staying in a giant house and he's getting gifts. Didn't it used to be when you took a politician out, like they had to pay for their own, you couldn't sign a thing. You know, Villaraigosa, didn't he have to return tickets because he took tickets? That's not anybody doing, a builder or contractor doing anybody's favors. No, I'm just doing favors in response to the fact that I like you. But the tickets have nothing to do with that. The suits and the liquor and the wine, nothing to do with that. So here we are. This is the state that we're in today. Congratulations. Bribery, you can't prove it anymore. So public corruption, man, never been easier. Congratulations to Congress. Federal prosecutors had to abandon their efforts on Menendez, and I'm sure right now as I'm speaking, guys are amping it up because they figured, yeah, the floodgate, that's like the in baseball where they give the sign to steal home. Congress just got the sign. They just got the big sign to steal home thanks to the Menendez case and the Virginia case where the governor rode a Ferrari, and he had, I think his daughter's wife was paid for, and he had a Rolex, and he took vacations, and his daughter's wedding dress was paid for by this patron, and he supposedly did favors for the guy's food company. But again, they couldn't prove it because the bar is so, there's no bar, actually. Where's their bar? Just have at it, and congratulations. We should all go into politics because it sounds like a really, it's a pretty good deal. Talk radio 790 KBC, 800-222-5222. Talk to you in a minute.
She says she knows my kind, she might maybe so.
Talk radio 790 KABC. Peter Till the 10 continues. Hour number two. That is Peter Tork and the Monkees. Song that he got to sing lead on. It's his birthday today. Happy birthday. I remember in Philadelphia many years ago, my older son, Ben, loved the Monkees. And, you know, he watched them on morning television. And I took him to see the Monkees at an outdoor in Fairmount Park. I can't remember the venue. And we were sitting very close. And they come out and he starts crying. He was throwing a tantrum, a little kid. Crying, and I go, what are you doing? He goes, that's not the Monkees, those are old men. I went, they're the Monks, shut up, they're the Monkees. And they could hear, we were like fourth row, and he's yelling, they're old men, it's not the Monkees. And they had already kind of changed 20 years ago. Now it's like 50 years ago. We just had on Mickey, who's doing well and still touring with Mike Nesmith. The big news today is that the Rob Porter controversy continues because there was a meeting this morning of FBI and intel chiefs at the Senate Intel Committee, and the FBI director, Chris Wray, said that the timeline on the information, the vetting of Mr. Porter, who never got a security clearance, was way back in March. And then in July, it ended, which puts them in jeopardy. The White House is saying, well, how did he look at all of the stuff that needed a security clearance? How did they know all this information, all these red flags that they continuously were alerted by the FBI? And it wasn't the FBI's job, by the way, to determine if he should have the job or not. That's the White House's job after the FBI gives you the information. But what's happening now is the ex-wives are speaking out and saying the White House has not called us or reached out to us. The speechwriter, David Sorensen's ex-wife, is saying that she was abused and no one has reached out to her. And now you got Joni Ernst, GOP Senator Joni Ernst, saying,
I'm not sure of the internal workings of the White House and when they found out what they found out, but I am extremely disappointed in this situation. Abuse is never okay. It is never okay. And so I feel very bad for those women. I am glad that they have come forward. And again, not understanding the internal dynamics of when was this discovered. Mm-hmm. We know that Rob Porter is now out of the picture. But I just want to reemphasize to everybody that abuse is never okay. And we need to send a very clear signal that it won't be tolerated. Mm-hmm. And it won't be tolerated with our employees.
Is the president sending that signal?
I think he needs to send a stronger message, a stronger message. We need to allow women and men that have been abused to come out, make sure their stories are heard and believed.
So John Kelly is saying he did everything correctly, but from what I'm hearing and reading, they kind of leaving him out to dry, hanging him out to dry, making it look like it was his determination. All of the reviews went to him. Nobody else really has the time to look at that stuff. And it was his decision not only to look the other way, but the information came out today was they were looking at elevating him and giving him a shot at some other jobs in the White House, more important jobs, bigger jobs. So as far as a promotion. So this is not going away. I anticipated incorrectly, but again, it's hard to judge with so much movement coming out of the White House every day, whether this was a story that was going to stick. But apparently it is sticking, because what's happening is a lot of the women in the perimeter of the White House are standing up and saying the president should reach out and say something. And again, Kellyanne Conway was on one of the Sunday shows, and she said she's not worried about Hope Hicks because she's a strong woman. And now the backlash has been from the women who were abused, the two ex-wives, saying we were strong women too. But when you're in an abuse situation like that, and you're denigrated and you're worn down, it has nothing to do with being a strong woman. And to imply that we weren't strong women is not something we want to put up with. So the back and forth continues, and it's out there in a big, big way. Also, the intelligence community this morning said that they are concerned about Russia hacking in the new election, and that we have done not much in the year that we've known about the Russia hacking doing anything to prevent it in the next election. So those are kind of the big bullet points about what's happening now. And the transportation chief is on right now. Elaine Chao is talking about a gas tax increase is not off the table, that they may do a gas tax increase along with looking for private investing and looking for the states and cities to kick in on the infrastructure plan, but that we may be paying for it with a gas tax increase also. Talk Radio 790 KBC, Peter Tilden at 10 continues right after this.